Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure and privilege to present to this audience once again Dr. Leonard Horowitz, a man who is not only a great citizen, but in my opinion, a hero, and also, not incidentally, the author of the vitally important recent book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional, published in hardcover by Tetrahedron Incorporated, copyright 1996. Len, welcome back to our airwaves.
Great to be back with you, Dave.
Once again, I think that the work that you've done is, the importance of the work that you've done could not be exaggerated. And I'd like to start by way of explanation with just what is a C-type RNA tumor virus? Because you begin with a discussion of what that is. Could you explain what that is?
Sure. It's a reverse transcriptase. Now, that's a unique enzyme that makes literally life go backwards. Typically in life, the way I guess God set it up if you believe in God, or nature set it up if you don't believe in God, that everything is based on the genetic blueprint of life called DNA. And the genetic map is used to develop RNA, which sends messages to the protein manufacturing station of the cell. And it brings in amino acids, it transfers amino acids to that station to then produce new cell parts and then new healthy cells, and that's what typically life does. Now, with this unique reverse transcriptase enzyme in this type C cancer virus, well, what happens is that it calls for life to operate in reverse. It takes this, with the unique enzyme, it takes a single strand of RNA that the cancer virus provides and then calls for the production of a new DNA from the RNA, which then calls for the cell to produce more viruses instead of healthy cell parts. And so this is exactly what researchers at the National Cancer Institute, including Dr. Robert Gallo, in fact, these were the preeminent retrovirus analysts who were evaluating these particular type C cancer viruses in monkeys and in humans, that this is what they were doing in the early 60s at Bionetics, and of course Gallo joined them in the late 60s, and then in the early 70s they had developed, using type C cancer viruses, a whole assortment of AIDS-like viruses. So that's the background on type C cancer viruses.
You've mentioned that the AIDS virus, it actually goes through a metamorphosis, or a morphogenesis is how you put it, and that it is at a certain point in its existence basically a C-type RNA tumor virus.
That is exactly right. That's based on scientific literature now. Researchers came out with that not that long ago. And so when I interviewed Gallo, and when, of course, I challenged him at the 11th International Conference on AIDS, and then he got back to me and gave me his objections to my thesis that he and his workers had developed AIDS-like viruses, and, of course, he denied that allegation. He came out with basically saying it wasn't possible to do that at that time, and, of course, that is absolutely hogwash. In fact, we have his publications that show not only that they were doing this type of research, but they themselves stated that this was extremely risky business. So, and on top of that, I mean, the guy is a complete liar. In fact, the latest news is, Dave, that I am joining forces with several different organizations, and we're currently seeking the wherewithal to bring a fraud suit against Dr. Gallo from a more of an independent organization and grassroots initiative.
All righty. Well, just for the sake of legal purposes for this station and others that will carry the program, I'm not in a position to state either myself or on behalf of the station that Dr. Robert Gallo is a liar. That's just simply for legal purposes. Now, back to Robert Gallo.
Yeah, but how do you really feel about that, Dave?
This is for legal purposes, and we're running out of time, Len, because that's actionable, and I cannot make such a statement
that's
about Robert
go
Gallo.
Ahead.
Robert Gallo, however, was doing some very interesting work. As you mentioned, they were basically using genetic engineering techniques to combine parts of monkey viruses with chicken viruses and other types of animal virus, I believe a cat virus, and then these were adapted to human cell cultures. Could you develop on that for us?
Certainly. Well, this is how Bionetics researchers, as well as Robert Gallo, under National Cancer Institute grant number 712025, it was entitled The Investigation of Viral Carcinogenesis in Primates. That means cancer production through viral infection in monkeys and humans. And the purpose of this grant was to evaluate whether these type C cancer viruses could be modified and be adapted to produce cancers that were traditionally occurring in animals, to be able to produce these in humans as well as monkeys. And that, interestingly enough, one of the many smoking guns in the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, is that the specific cancer complex tied with immune suppression and immune system dysfunction, that specific one that they spent most of their time and money studying during the largely funded and mostly secret special virus cancer program, was the leukemia, lymphoma, sarcoma, immune suppression cancer complex that never existed on planet Earth before 1978 with the first cases of AIDS. And you see, when you begin to see that they did exactly what you're saying, they took monkey viruses that they knew would cause cancer in virtually every animal species inoculated into. I'm speaking about SV40, simian virus 40, plus other monkey viruses like the woolly monkey virus. And at the same time, they took human lymphoma viruses that they absolutely knew would cause cancer of the human lymph nodes. And they began to recombine those viruses with elements from the feline leukemia virus, such as the RNA that they knew would cause a whole laundry list of symptoms virtually identical to what AIDS patients are suffering from now. And they also took chicken leukemia, sarcoma virus, RNA, and that would cause wasting, immunosuppression, and death. And that once they had then that mix, they called it a mutant hybrid, if you will, it still had some problems infecting human cells. To get it to jump species easily, they then cultured it and reported culturing it in human white blood cells in some studies and human fetal tissue cells in culture in other studies so that it would adapt. It would develop then the little unique proteins on the outside membrane of the virus known as GP120-like proteins, which allowed this new type of man-made virus to attach to the human cells, be carried across the human cell membrane, enter the human gene, and then do virtually everything that the AIDS virus does.
You mentioned that that complex, that disease complex, never before seen, emerged in 1978. And before we get to the NCI's Special Viral Cancer Research Program and some of the connections to that, in 1969, there was a prediction made in a congressional hearing that a disease like AIDS could be made, and then the program was funded. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, that was the infamous now 1970 Department of Defense appropriations. The hearings were held in 68. After 68, when Henry Kissinger took over as National Security Advisor under Richard Nixon, he almost immediately ordered Melvin Laird to do a reassessment of America's biological weapons capabilities. He was looking for alternatives to nuclear weapons, and when that reassessment came in, he selected therein the option to develop these types of immune system ravaging microorganisms for germ warfare. And then that specific definition of what they were going to be doing was in that document that initiated my three-year investigation into the origins of AIDS and Ebola that ultimately ended up in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. The document itself called for, quote, the development of a, quote, new infectious microorganism that could differ in certain important aspects from any known disease-causing microorganism. And most important of these is that it would be refractory to the immunologic and therapeutic processes upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious diseases.
Len, define refractory for us.
Well, in essence, what they were looking for, Dave, was a, quote, super germ, end quote. And that word also appeared in the congressional record. A super germ that would not be capable of being treated. It would be able to eliminate the host's immune system, leaving people susceptible to the opportunistic infections like tuberculosis, like pneumonia, like candidiasis yeast infections, and like the cancers that we see in AIDS.
Now, you mentioned that the we were talking about Dr. Gallo and the work that was being done recombining various animal C-type RNA tumor viruses and then adapting them to human cell cultures. And you mentioned the National Cancer Institute and their special viral cancer research program, if I'm getting the words ordered properly.
Perfect.
That and Fort Detrick, Maryland. What's the connection?
Well, Fort Detrick was the testing grounds for the viruses that were being produced outside the National Cancer Institute in independent contractors and outside the military in these organizations like Litton Bionetics. For example, Litton was sixth on the list of major Army biological weapons contractors at the time. The director of Litton Industries, or president, was Roy Ash, the counterpart for, or the other person who was being considered for the Henry Kissinger's role and job for, as National Security Advisor. His organization was a contractor, much like the New York University Medical Center was a contractor. And, of course, I show you in the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, the entire list right from the congressional record of all of the top Army biological weapons contractors. Now, they produced these mutant viruses in their labs. They then sent them to various Army biological weapons testing facilities, and Fort Detrick was the number one. And, of course, there is no accident then in 1972. Nixon turns this over, this entire multi-billion dollar facility. He sells it at a 10 cents on the dollar to the National Cancer Institute to become the new home of the National Cancer Institute, wherein he says we're no longer going to be developing or testing biological weapons here. And, of course, in small print, they write that they're going to continue to do it for, quote, defensive purposes only. But any fool who knows anything about this knows that if they're going to evaluate defensive, then first they have to produce the germs for offensive. So nothing stopped. After the signing of the Geneva Accord and after the sale of the Fort Detrick, Maryland biological weapons testing facilities to the National Cancer Institute, nothing changed, as in fact today this biological weapons testing and development continues.
Two corporate overlaps with the NCI and Fort Detrick and the Special Viral Cancer Research Program, Litton Industries, which we've already touched on, and Merck. Both companies have a lot to do not only with biotechnology but biological warfare.
Oh, yes, and I think the information that you brought to my attention was extremely critical. When you shared with me the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and it goes into detail about how Martin Bormann, upon Hitler's direction, was told to invest the Nazi war chest, not only for Germany's reconstruction post-World War II, but literally for the development of a virtual monopoly over the world's pharmaceutical and chemical industries, and this was specifically for the New Ordnung, it was stated in the documents, that is the New World Order, and it was specifically for the rise of the Fourth Reich, he even told Bormann, and that then Bormann invested the vast majority of the Nazi war chest in 750 corporations, among which Merck was primary. And then you see that at the same exact time, Merck's president, George W. Merck, was made director of America's biological weapons industry, personally appointed by President Roosevelt. And at the same exact time, you remember Henry Kissinger was getting involved in seeking out and finding the Nazis under Project Paperclip to exfiltrate them out of Nazi Germany and ultimately get them to work for United States intelligence and American medical industry, the medical people, and that Kissinger had been a major and has been a major consultant to Merck Sharp & Dohme. And, of course, Merck has now developed into the largest pharmaceutical company in the world, and they are principally responsible for the vaccine that most plausibly delivered AIDS to the world, as I concluded in Chapter 13 of the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, and then in the new audio tape that we're coming out with based on our work, Dave. It's a brand new one. It's called The Nazi American Biomedical Biowarfare Connection, and it traces, subtitle is Rockefeller, Kissinger, Bush, and the Rise of the Fourth Reich. In that tape, we're going to have Maurice Hilleman, the Merck Sharp and Dohme's top vaccine developer and the top vaccine developer for the United States military on tape, recorded in 1986, admitting that he brought the AIDS virus into North America in contaminated monkeys that were shipped by Litton Bionetics. So basically, you know, this is the connections, and it's absolutely stunning and horrifying.
We're going to get into Litton's African operations in just a couple of minutes, but we should perhaps solidify the connection between Litton Industries, which is also a major defense contractor, and Fort Detrick and the NCI's Special Viral Cancer Research Program, because this is one of the main connections.
Well, you see, Litton Bionetics ran the entire National Cancer Institute's Fort Detrick, Maryland facilities. They administered all the money going through that facility. They administered all the programs. They largely set the agenda for the programs. And they held the contracts, which we reprint. We reprint in black and white the United States contract summary reports in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, where you see Litton also held the contracts to supply all the cancer viruses and all the biological weapons contractors throughout the world with all of the monkeys, all the monkey cell lines, all the monkey viral mutant hybrids, so that they could continue to do their cancer and biological weapons research. And so the connection between Litton, Fort Detrick, and the National Cancer Institute is like they're the same.
We're talking about the Merck hepatitis B vaccine, and you theorize that that may very well have been the vehicle through which AIDS was introduced into the American and perhaps other populations. Now, this was developed by Merck, and a couple of names that figure prominently in this development are the aforementioned Maurice Hilleman and a fellow named Wolf Schmunis.
Right. Well, Wolf Schmunis came in after the 1974. He was actually involved, and in my opinion, he was kind of like a great fall guy. He had connections to the Hepatitis B project, but from my research, he didn't really get heavily involved until the actual clinical studies that were ongoing in the late 70s. Now, my research, I go into the early 70s, where it was Saul Krugman from the New York University Medical Center, another documented biological weapons contractor for the Department of Defense, that Saul began to study this hepatitis B in Willowbrook State School mentally retarded children. And between 1965 and 1970, he had inoculated several hundred children with what he felt and his colleagues believed were cancer viruses, hepatitis B. And of course, now we have hepatitis C, which we now know is a known cancer virus. And in fact, my theory is that since we began with hepatitis B, it was initially called the Australian antigen, and Krugman and the others started to mutate this and hybridize this and reconstruct it, they began to get the variety of different types of hepatitis virus that we now are hearing much about, like the hepatitis A, C, D, E, and so on and so forth. So basically, we only had initially one, and this was Saul Krugman's project, and then in 1970, he turned the vaccine project against hepatitis B over to Maurice Hilleman, and then as I show you in the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, in 1970-71, Hilleman and researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and the Food and Drug Administration imported contaminated monkeys and chimpanzees from Litton Bionetics. And, of course, this is contrary to what the propaganda is in the book The Hot Zone and The Coming Plague by Laurie Garrett, both of those funded by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, which was intimately connected not only with the Rockefeller-led military medical industrial complex, but also in the cancer industry, and also in the blood industry, and also in the population control industry. And so what happened was that the monkeys came in, the contaminated monkeys came in, and Hilleman began to grow hepatitis B viruses in these contaminated animals. When they had grown enough, they extracted the hepatitis B viruses out of the contaminated animals, and along with it, they all came the assortment of other monkey viruses and herpes-type viruses that are now associated with chronic fatigue, immune dysfunction, and a host of other illnesses. And so they then inoculated this complete gross viral mixture into, again, the children. And by 1974, the gay men in New York City and the blacks in Central Africa, Eastern Zaire, and Northwest Uganda, under another contract that I show you, again, I reprint that contract summary report, again, right in the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. You see Hilleman's name, you see their name, study title, which was the research on oncogenic viruses and vaccine development. That means cancer-causing viruses and vaccine development, and they were using human subjects as well as monkeys, and that then I show you that that was most plausibly the first vaccine that that initiated the AIDS epidemic. Why? Because the epidemiology, because of the time. You see, the first isolated strain of an AIDS virus is a 1976 strain. Nothing earlier. Contrary to popular belief, and hoaxes that have been out in the media, 76 is the earliest strain. So that means you would have had to have had this created prior to 1976. Well, the only thing that makes sense is in 1974, that specific vaccine was developed partly in contaminated chimpanzees supplied by Litton, and partly in contaminated human beings who had 10 years previously received the heavily contaminated polio vaccine, again containing monkey virus contaminants.
You mentioned, too, that Maurice Hilleman, like so many of the people and institutions we've been touching on, also, in addition to medical research, overlaps research into biological warfare.
Oh, there's no doubt. In fact, Hilleman's research and his history goes way back to the Department of Defense's research and development, Department of Science and Research. And you see his involvement as a young man started right around the time of the OSS, when the CIA was just at the end of World War II, beginning to be formed as a cover organization for the German intelligence, a network called the Galen Org and the Merck Net. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Merck Net had some relationship to Merck Pharmaceuticals, and that Hilleman began at that time, and of course very soon became the number one, not only Merck Sharp and Dohme's top vaccine developer, but also the top vaccine developer for the United States Army.
One of the things that's interesting, too, is that as the AIDS virus began to spread, and as suspicion began to focus on, among other things, the hepatitis B vaccine program, you mentioned that a Gallo colleague named Poitz did a study which actually served to throw people off the trail.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. The hepatitis B question, whether this vaccine gave rise to the AIDS epidemic, had been brought out by several other researchers who obviously saw the writing on the wall and had seen the incriminating evidence in the research literature, as I had. And so they then put pressure on the CDC to research the question. And then, interestingly enough, anonymous researchers at the Centers for Disease Control, I mean, they didn't even have the guts to put their name on the study. How do you like that? They worked with Poitz and Guerin and people from Abbott Labs and people from Merck Sharp and Dohme to do a study that basically was a bogus scientific study published in the journal Science, which I've seen time and time again. That is a scientific journal that is kind of like a scientific mouthpiece for the Central Intelligence Agency. And in essence, they published a bogus study saying that there was no association between the hepatitis B vaccine and the AIDS epidemic. Meanwhile, the study population that they used, if you look at it, it shows you right away that the study is completely misleading and totally ridiculous, because the huge outbreak of AIDS cases happened in New York City in the gay men, much less so in Denver, much less so in Los Angeles or even San Francisco. Well, these folks, they worked in New York City. They had access to the New York City blood labs. They had access to the gay men in New York City. They had all those records right there, but they refused to look at the New York City population. They looked only at Denver, and they looked only at San Francisco, and then they published that bogus report in Science.
Now, talking about New York City and the blood supply there, as the AIDS epidemic began to develop momentum and as New York City became one of the epicenters for that developing epidemic, an individual was assigned as, I believe, the head of the New York City blood supply. Was it New York City Health Commissioner? And interestingly enough, this fellow David Sensor had previously been associated with the Tuskegee experiment, for which President Clinton recently apologized. Could you tell us briefly, because we're almost, we got about 2-3 minutes, about Tuskegee, David Sensor, and his position in this inquiry?
Sure. Again, it shows you that the connections between, you know, what we are seeing with the AIDS epidemic goes back to military intelligence and public health studies that were genocidal. The Tuskegee study, David Sensor, played a key role as the principal director of that study, and that he was handling the public relations on that study when he was at Tuskegee. Then all of a sudden, when gay men were marching in the streets in New York City wanting to get more support for this new gay-related immune dysfunction or deficiency, this was prior to AIDS, it was called GRID, and that they were screaming in New York to please give us something. Well, Sensor, they sent Sensor, David Sensor, to become the director of the New York Department of Public Health, and then he was the one who basically did the media education and the, responded to the media inquiries. And he was the one then that made the settlements with the gay community, saying that we'll provide you with confidentiality and we'll assure you with confidentiality. So meanwhile, that did nothing but spread the epidemic further. It was not handled in a traditional public health sense. It was handled in a political sense, and he was, again, the principal player in that.
And he'd also been associated with the Tuskegee study.
Exactly.
Perhaps his last name is spelled S-E-N-S-E-R. Perhaps it would have been more appropriate if it was spelled C-E-N-S-O-R under the circumstances.
Yeah, right, David Sensor.
Len, we're almost through with this particular side. For the benefit of stations that only play a half hour at a time, and there are some, could you give us the address, fax number, et cetera, website address for Tetrahedron, where people can get a hold of your book and tapes?
Sure, I appreciate that, Dave. The easiest way to get a hold of it is by calling a toll-free number. It's 1-888-508-4787. That's 1-888-508-4787. That's a toll-free number. Also, we have a website. It's www.tetrahedron.org. That's spelled TETRAHEDRON.org, as an organization, O-R-G. And, Dave, we've got a bunch of new materials, too. Besides the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, we've got the video, which is almost a three-hour presentation where I go into the vaccine contamination issues and look at the question as to whether vaccines are really safe and effective. We've got some audio tapes, including some that we've produced together. One is called Virus Makers of the CIA. It's fabulous. Another one is going to be recently produced, which I told you about earlier. It's the Nazi-American Biomedical Biowarfare Connection. And then we've got another package, because everybody's asking me constantly, what do we do to guard ourselves against these viruses? Well, we've got a new one out called Taking Care of Yourself, and it's a very important work for people.
All righty, and once again, very quickly, because we're almost out of time, the numbers for those. We've got 30 seconds.
Sure. Easy to call, toll-free, 1-888-508-4787. That's 1-888-50-VIRUS.
1-888-50-VIRUS. Very good, Len. We have been speaking with Dr. Leonard Horowitz, the author of Emerging Viruses. For Dr. Leonard Horowitz, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.